This is Gridiron Graduates, a weekly podcast covering all things football. Episode 35, Combine Harvester, with special guest Field Yates. Recorded March 2nd, 2016.
And we are back from hiatus. Yes, we've had a couple weeks off, but the Gridiron Graduates are back, and we are ready for a brand new offseason. Bill Rossetti, joining you guys, as always, hitting you guys back up. Great to be back. Nice little two-week vacation for us, but we're back. We're ready to go. Ian Wharton, of course, my excellent co-host. How you been, buddy? It's been a couple weeks. Good to talk to you again, man.
I'm doing very well. It's the most exciting time of the NFL season. If you're a fan of a bad team like myself, this is the one time where the Miami Dolphins actually win, you could say, I guess, or at least create some sort of interest. So I'm doing well, and I'm looking forward to the shenanigans that they'll get into here in the next couple weeks.
Absolutely. And especially considering you won't get to see your boy Ben Simmons in the NCAA tournament. Sorry. Yeah, like I said, we're back, and boy, we are back with a bang. You know, we've had some great guests on in the past, but this one tonight, man, when he told me that he was good to go for tonight, I was like a kid in a candy store. I've had the biggest smile on my face all day long, and I'm so happy to introduce him. You know him from ESPN. He's one of the nicest guys you can meet, an excellent reporter for ESPN, Field Yates. Joining the show this week. Field, what is going on, man? Welcome to the show.
Oh, it's good to be on, guys, and I feel like after that introduction, I can do nothing but let the audience down. Because I mean, I have to be like, you know, like with the football insight of, I don't know, pick this, like, you know, Vince Lombardi, and packaged with like the vocal abilities of Taylor Swift or something. I can't provide on one of them, but I'll give it my best. I'll give it my best shot here.
Yeah, we definitely appreciate you take some time out to join us, man. It's a real honor. We're real excited to have you on here.
Always good to be on.
Field, of course, you know, like we said, works with ESPN and has spent some time in the NFL, has worked with the Chiefs, worked with the Patriots. So to start, if you want to just give us a little bit of your background, Field, you know, where you've come from, you know, some of your history with football and whatnot.
You got us off the ground at least. I did start my football career working with the Patriots. That started actually after my junior year of high school. Started doing some entry level scouting stuff there, and that continued until I graduated from college. I went to school up in the Northeast. I'm from the Greater Boston area, and after I graduated from Wesleyan University in lovely Middletown, Connecticut, I found myself in Kansas City working for the Chiefs in their scouting department. And then at some point after some time there, I don't know if I would call it an epiphany, but I had maybe not even a light switch moment, because I guess those were sort of the same thing. But I had some sort of mindset shift where I didn't know that I wanted to be working in football anymore specifically, but I wasn't quite sure what was next either. That led me back to the East Coast. And eventually a path that was like one of those California roads on the coast that kind of just like twists and turns. That was sort of how I got to ESPN. It wasn't like this direct route right after I left Kansas City. I knew I was going to go into the media side. But I eventually found myself at ESPN, where duties basically call for covering football. If it's football, whether it's real football, whether it's free agency, whether it's the draft, whether it's the season itself, whether it's fantasy football, if there is football involved, I consider myself open for business at ESPN. So I like to try to take some of what I learned working in the scouting business and apply it there. And then also I'm trying to sort of hone some reporting chops as well to be, kind of balanced in my coverage now. So it makes for good times. I spend my time basically between Bristol, which is where ESPN is, also in the middle of Connecticut, and up in Boston, which is my home base in downtown Boston, where I live currently.
Nice. Ian, you got anything you want to talk about, Field, or any thoughts?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I just have nothing but a huge amount of respect as someone that has a huge interest in scouting. When I first got to college, obviously that was my major goal. You know, I want to become a scout. And kind of as I learned more, it's really an interesting business field. And what was your experience from your time with scouting and coaching with that type of internship? I mean, that's really what a lot of young media people like myself and Bill, and that's kind of what we strive for, or at least that was the intention starting out. What was your experience with that?
It is the most simultaneously gratifying and also in some ways it's time consuming, obviously, but like it's gratifying, but it can also sort of be a narrowing experience, right? Like the football life, you guys know this. Football life is a grind. And not to say that other industries don't require a similar level of hard work and work ethic, but football is, you live and you breathe it. But it is this incredibly gratifying feeling. And one thing that I really realized during my time in Kansas City was that, you know, you spend all week, Monday through Saturday, getting ready for the game ahead. And if you win on Sunday, there are not too many feelings, and it's not a feeling like you walk around and, you know, you're raising the roof or something like that. It's just simply this weight lifted off of your shoulders on Monday morning when you win on Sunday. It's like what you went through for 100 hours in the six days preceding was worth it. And when you lose, you say to yourself, well, you still poured your heart and soul into it, but, you know, scouting is a very unique industry, and I think I've learned about how people view it, and I've had some observations about, I don't want to call it outside football scouting, but, you know, there are people who spend time poring over game tape, not necessarily for their primary source of income. You know, I there are plenty of draft enthusiasts and football enthusiasts who do it as a hobby, and I have tremendous respect for that. And there are people who do it now for a living as well. People who, you know, Mel Kiper has turned the draft industry into sort of the cottage industry, right? It is now a thing. There are draft experts at many, many websites. I think the one thing that I always remember about scouting that I think is important, and it's that you don't have to see the player the same way as others do, or everyone does. And also that there's never a fully right answer, right? Like you can always seek more information on a player or on a team. So I think that one thing that I sort of have to have grown accustomed to and sort of adapted to in following, again, I'm not sure what the exact, you know, non-football scouting is that, you know, there's a lot of absolute spoken, right? You know, this guy is no good at this, or this guy is the best at that. And I think it's important to always remember that scouting is almost like a sliding scale. So, you know, there's room for improvement here, or he is very good there. I think that it's helped me probably evaluate other things besides football in my life. But it's really it can be an addicting hobby or job when you're working inside of it in the NFL.
Yeah, that's a really good point. You know, as someone that writes, you know, I cover the draft for Bleacher Report, and we talk every week here, you know, about draft or NFL. It just kind of depends on what's going on. Obviously, it's always football on our minds. But, you know, what's kind of been your take? Let me try to word this correctly. What was your biggest takeaway from that experience as you transitioned into the media role? Especially into your bigger roles. I mean, I know you worked with SB Nation and then obviously into ESPN and other entities. What was kind of your perspective change moving from one side of the business to a completely other side of the business?
Well, here's one part of it. You know, this is draft season, right? We are fully entrenched into the pre-draft season. And one thing that was foreign to me, but is just the way it works in the media, is speaking of players in terms of rounds, like this is a first round quarterback, or this is, I think he's a third round wide receiver. And one thing that, you know, scouting teaches you, GMs, they want specifics. They want specificity. They want as much detail as you can provide on a player. And so it's almost like painting a picture. So when I tell you this guy, let me just make this up. This is a third round tight end. Like, what does that mean? Like, if I went to, you know, my time in Kansas City, my boss was Scott Pioli. In New England, it was Scott. It was also Bill Belichick. If I went to Bill Belichick right now and I said, hey, you know, I've been watching this Hunter Henry kid from Arkansas, and I think he's really a second-round tight end, he'd look at me like I had six heads. He'd say, what the heck does that mean? That means nothing to me. Rob Gronkowski went in the second round as a tight end. He might go down as the greatest tight end in NFL history. There have been other tight ends who have been drafted in the first round. Eric Ebron a couple of years ago, who some people feel like now was overdrafted, right? So assigning a draft grade to a player, a round grade to a player is something that I've had to adjust because it doesn't tell you what the player is going to be at the NFL level. So when I think of a prospect, I think of it more of the timeline and his role. So again, let's go back to Hunter Henry. I think if I were to grade Hunter Henry, and I haven't spent as much time as I would during on a scouting report for Hunter Henry, I would like to think of it as, hey, this is a player who is a first or second year starter, which, you know, it's a high grade at the NFL level. Or if you thought he was more of a, you know, he's a backup tight end in his first and second seasons. Like, I just think that part of the adjustment has been speaking the language, just like I felt as though much of my time in New England and then Kansas City, or at least in New England to get started, was learning how to speak the language. You know, it's one thing if you can say that, hey, I think this Aaron Rodgers guy is really good. It's another thing to be able to break down at sort of a finite level what it is that makes Aaron Rodgers so good and what it is he does differently or superior to other quarterbacks.
And it's interesting you brought that up. That's actually something similar to a few months ago when I talked to Dan Hatman. He kind of said the same thing. You know, we're trying to get away from using round grades on a player, like getting away from saying he's a first-round quarterback or second-round running back or whatever, and more, you know, what's his projection at the NFL? Like you said, you know, is he a starter? Is he a backup his first year or whatnot? So, yeah, that's something. Go ahead.
I'd say to further illustrate that point, now let's look at this sort of retroactively to give us some context. If I had graded EJ Manuel as a first round quarterback in the 2013 draft, I would have been right. Mm-hmm. But the year before, if I had also given a first round grade to Andrew Luck, I would have been right as well. But if I, and I know that people got more specific on Andrew Luck and calling him, you know, you know, a once-in-a-generation type prospect, but maybe Ryan Tannehill and E.J. Manuel. Like, both of them were first-round quarterbacks a year apart. I'm not saying that that Ryan Tannehill doesn't have questions to answer, and I'm sure Ian would have thoughts on that, but, you know, like, Ryan Tannehill is a superior player to E.J. Manuel. As a matter of fact, it's not even close. They were both first-round quarterbacks a year apart. So that's part of the sort of the, you know, the trick with these round grades is a third round grade this year may be different from a third round grade next year, which is why I think it's important that we are almost always seeking, you know, seeking the maximum amount of information as opposed to lumping guys into a bucket that we all sort of understand what it means. At the same time, I'm not sure it's the full context.
Nice. So let's kind of dive in a little bit to some of this year's prospects. More specifically, I want to get your thoughts a little bit on the combine. First of all, you know, as a former scout and now being like a media scout, how much value should we as, you know, guys that follow the draft or want to start following the draft, how much value should we take from the combine and some of the different events that the players take part in?
You know, I think that one of the things we all want to say, like, hey, does the combine mean a ton for everybody? It can mean a great deal for some guys. And for other guys, it might not mean that much. Like, a standout performance might not mean that much, or a substandard performance might not mean that much. Now, think about someone like, I apologize if I'm screwing the name of it, William Jackson, the corner from Houston, who he ran spectacular. I mean, he had an incredible 40 there. And all of a sudden people are saying, all right, like, this kid now might have to start talking about him at the back end of the first round or, you know, the middle of the second round. I mean, that just the fact that I'm, you know, sort of questioning if I even have the name, if I have the last name right, sort of speaks to the fact that this guy is a Southern riser. It can mean a lot for him. Now, there are other guys who I know Joey Bosa has what people are sort of describing is just an average combine. I'm not so sure that I'm necessarily looking at Joey Bosa any differently today than I did when I arrived at Indianapolis on Thursday. I just feel like Joey Bosa, if you look at what he did at Ohio State and the way that he played, I don't think that I was excited about him because I thought he had this, you know, Von Miller type first step. I thought that he was overwhelming to opposing offensive tackles because of his inline power, his ability to engage, disengage or engage, re-engage, some things with his hands that are just hard to teach. So the combine is a piece of the puzzle. It's critical that teams have the right context for each player. And I think in some ways the two most important parts of the combine are the two things that us on the outside have no information or no access to. One is the medical information, because it's an exhaustive battery of tests that team doctors are administering onto players. And then two is the formal interviews and the informal interviews. The formal interviews are a chance for coaches that have had no exposure to these players to sit down with them, put them on the board. And I said, you know, put them up on the grease board and say, hey, you know, we're going to drop a scheme. If it's a defensive back, we're going to drop a route concept. You tell us what you guys called it at the college level, or you guys tell us, you know, what you guys, you know, what will be, what does this indicate to you, et cetera. It's a way for coaches to sort of gauge the football IQ and character of players. And, you know, I'll never forget some of the formal interviews and some of the pre-draft visits. So the combine it's a made for TV event externally. But I think that saying that that's the only part that matters or the part that matters most, I think is a little bit of a misnomer.
And you talked about, some of these stud players. And because I noticed a lot of talk, too, was about Jalen Ramsey, the defensive back from Florida State, who, by a lot of accounts, had an outstanding combine. Ian, I know you're a big fan of Jalen Ramsey, and I'll get your thoughts in a little bit. Just looking at some of the numbers, 4.4 140, 41.5-inch vert, 11.3 broad, 4.18 20-yard shuttle. So when you see numbers like that on a guy that's already a top prospect, what do you take away from that for a kid like Ramsey, who was already pegged as potentially a top five pick in the draft?
Yeah, sometimes the combine can be a confirmation of what you see and what you expected. Jalen Ramsey, to me, is what is sometimes referred to in the scouting community. There are sort of two ways to describe it. Clean, and I don't mean clean like, hey, he doesn't, you know, no off-field issues. I mean clean as in, like, he has the height, weight, speed, minimum thresholds accounted for. Mm-hmm. He's above those. And also, he's a terrific kid. He is probably the best way to describe it is a check-the-box prospect. Mm-hmm. You know, every box that you want to evaluate for a certain position, it feels like Jalen Ramsey covers it. And as a matter of fact, he might cover it for two separate positions, because I think at the NFL level, he certainly has the length and the coverage skills to be a cornerback, and he might just be athletic, instinctive, and tough enough. I mean, I had someone tell me that he was the best run-defending cornerback they've graded in their time in the NFL. And some of that's willingness, right? Some of that is willingness to be a tackler. Mm-hmm. And then some of it is just the tackling ability. But if you can say that Jalen Ramsey could be a first-day starter at a high level as a cornerback or a safety, and I mean that to me is – he should be in play for the Titans at the number one overall pick.
It's really incredible because you don't really see defensive backs like him – too often. I mean, I loved Marcus Peters last year. Obviously, he had some questions to answer off of the field and technically kind of on the field too with his sideline antics. But Ramsey's, it's just so interesting to find an elite safety prospect like him, but also someone that has the nickelback, also the boundary corner experience. He's just such a unique player. And you mentioned the character. Everyone that you talk to about this kid says just the best things about him. It's really interesting to have two guys like he and Laremy Tunsil. I don't think it's an overall very deep draft field. I mean, I definitely want your thoughts on that, but it seems like at the top you have two just wonderful prospects in Tunsil and Ramsey.
Yeah, the good news for the Titans, I think if they just go for the let's not overthink this approach, that they're going to be in good shape, because Laremy Tunsil, to me, is a first-day starter at left tackle. He's a match and mirror guy, as I'm sure you guys have already know. He's not, he's not going to, rest his shoulder on your shoulder and ride you 5 yards up the field. And that's okay, because the most important thing that he can do if he's drafted by Tennessee is keep Marcus Mariota upright. And I'm with you as well, that Jalen Ramsey, just an elite prospect, who, by the way, happened to go to Brentwood Academy, which is not far from where the Titans play in Nashville. It is an interesting class. I think that there actually is a little bit of, I think the sentiment in Indianapolis was that there's pretty good depth. There's just not a ton of top flight prospects at recent positions that we've been focused in on. Obviously, quarterback will always dictate the fabric of a class. Last year, we felt like it was going to be a strong draft, in part because you had two quarterbacks going in some order, number one and number two. Obviously, Jameis and then Marcus Mariota. But also, we've seen so many incredible wide receivers over the past two drafts. And really, last year's draft, two of the top four or five wide receivers we didn't even see this year in Breshad Perriman and Kevin White. And frankly, Nelson Agholor, who many, and I would lump myself 100% into this group, thought was the most ready-made wide receiver not named Amari Cooper in last year's class. He was far from it. I mean, he was a full year work in progress. Yep. So because there's so few wide receivers, everybody says, all right, this guy is a first round lock this year. Laquon Treadwell really being the only one. I think that's part of the problem with the perception here. And then also the last thing I'll say is that, if there's one position that seems to have very good depth, it's defensive tackle. And the importance of an interior defensive lineman cannot be overstated. But when was the last time, I will not include J.J. Watt in this conversation because we did not think J.J. Watt would be what J.J. Watt is when he came out in 2011. But the last time we were all super stoked about a top two or three pick with the most interior defensive lineman was probably Ndamukong Suh in 2010. Like, even Aaron Donald slipped to 11 or 12 with the Rams, in part because of his size, which we all know now was crazy, but in part because people were saying to themselves, it's a defensive tackle. Like, you can find a three technique on the street if you absolutely need to. So I think those factors all contribute to maybe the perception of the class right now.
Absolutely. I don't know how much longer you have or if you need to head out soon.
Let's keep rocking and rolling, boys. Let's keep rocking and rolling.
All right. Cool. Now I got some other stuff I want to talk about. I guess when I was – because I didn't get a chance to really see a lot of the combine. I need to go back and watch a little bit. But, I've seen, some of the numbers, and certainly one of the numbers that stuck out at me was the 4.31 40 by Keith Marshall of Georgia. Yeah. And then Zeke Elliott, who by all accounts seems to be the number one running back in this year's class, and with good reason. Elliott was just outstanding at Ohio State. There's talk now that he could be in play for a top five pick. So what were your thoughts kind of on – let's talk about those two right now and get your thoughts on them.
Let's unpackage it in the reverse order here and start with Zeke Elliott.
Okay.
I think, just like last year, actually, there were some people who believed that Todd Gurley was the best prospect in the class before the draft. Now, obviously, the position, that will always factor into it. People say, well, he might be the best prospect, but can you really take a running back number one overall? The answer was no, and Tampa Bay had good reason to go with Jameis, and it was a good pick for him. for them, as was Marcus in Tennessee and as was Todd Gurley in St. Louis. The reason I mention that is that there are going to be people this year who are going to have Zeke Elliott as a top five prospect. Now, the better question might be, where does that leave him relative to his actual draft slot? I think, as of right now, March 2nd, I would be surprised if Zeke Elliott goes in the top five. It's not because I don't love Zeke Elliott, but it's because if you look at the teams in the top five, and you assess their needs, and I know Dallas has a need for a running back. Dallas also has a lot of other needs, and I'm not so sure that you could get the, let's say they also believe they have a need for a pass rusher. The pass rusher that might be available at pick 35, I think the gap between him and a Joey Bosa is larger than the gap would be between a Zeke Elliott and a Kenneth Dixon or somebody like that who could be available to top around to amongst running backs. But I love Zeke Elliott. I think he is a four-down running back at the NFL. You could play him on special teams if you ever wanted to. He's tough enough to do that. I just don't. I think first round is very much in play, maybe even top half of the first round. Top five pick, though, maybe a little too rich for my blood as of this very moment. And then Keith Marshall, I think this is it's incredible. First of all, I think there were some scouts. I know there were some scouts who were surprised he was even invited to the combine. Just because, you know, the production from this past year was fairly limited. But I, for people who may not know who Keith Marshall is, he was the number one running back in the country when he came out back in, I think, 2011. And as a matter of fact, he helped sway Todd Gurley from committing elsewhere and bringing him to Georgia. He made that Todd Gurley commitment happen, or at least had an influential role in it. So he brought Todd Gurley into the fold. And then, you know, so I'm not going to discount Marshall's value because he was, you know, he eventually was stuck behind Todd Gurley, but he blew out his knee twice. He had two ACL tears in the college level. He had a very, very good freshman season. And in limited touches this year, he was actually pretty productive. The problem was, You tear your ACL twice, and you're stuck behind Todd Gurley. And then Todd Gurley leaves school, and next thing you know, it's Nick Chubb, who one day will be playing on Sundays in the NFL as well. So Keith Marshall is absolutely an NFL-level running back, and he's going to start to be a more intriguing name after that 4.3 140. He's just been a victim of wrong place, wrong time, and, of course, unfortunate injury luck while he was at Georgia.
Speaking of another injured player field, what on earth is going on with Jalen Smith, linebacker from Notre Dame? I mean, things that are coming out about him from the combine are really, I mean, horrifying.
Yeah,
and this was
crazy, that story.
Yeah, a premier player at the college level, probably one of the top 5 to 10 players in the draft if he's healthy. What have you heard about what teams think about him after they've gotten their first real medical look at him?
Yeah, I always feel bad calling someone a loser of the combine, right? A guy who sort of his stock takes a hit. Mm-hmm. But man, it's hard to imagine that Jalen Smith is in the same territory now as he was before the draft. Before the combine. Let's imagine that he doesn't get that injury against Ohio State in the Fiesta Bowl. I'm not saying this as a matter of opinion. I think it's close to a matter of fact that he would have been a top five prospect. Again, we're at that prospect tier. You know, he would have been in conversation for the number one overall pick. Mm-hmm. Another four-down player, 240 pounds, 6'3", can really, really run. The kind of guy that, remember, if you're taking a guy in the top five, you're not just looking for a terrific football player, but, you know, you want a guy that can be a face of your franchise. You know, I mean, quickly, too. Jalen Smith would have been exactly that. So all that is, you know, I still think that he's going to find a home at the NFL. But, man, I don't know if the slide's going to be, well, does he go to the back end of the first round? Does he go to the top of the second round? Does it go more than that? I mean, multiple rounds? I hope the answer is not that far. And, you know, maybe this is more of a Willis McGahee situation. Like that was, I believe, a 2002 or 2003 draft where he still ended up in, you know, I think it was pick 26 to Buffalo. And Willis McGahee turned out to be an excellent pro. and was worth the investment for the Bills. I hope it's not too far for Jalen Smith. I know it's not our job in the media to root for guys, but you just hate to see it from a timing standpoint, and a player that was so good for so long at the college level.
Yeah, because I've seen talk, you know, there was the news that he took out that insurance policy, and I know some people were saying, you know, he might fall all the way to maybe the fifth if things check out, you know, dealing with nerve damage. So just really unfortunate to see what happened with Jalen Smith. Other than that, there's certainly a lot of other stuff that went on in the last couple of weeks. I know you've been following the franchise tags too, Field. What did we end up with? 9 players got the franchise tag. 1 got the transition tag. Real quick, if you want to explain to the listeners what the main difference is between the franchise tag and the transition tag before we actually get into the players that got those tags.
Yeah, to simplify it, the franchise tag is basically paying a player the average of the top 5 salaries of players in his position using the last 5 years as the snapshot. Or transition tag is the top 10 at a player's position. However, the transition tag, a player can sign a contract offer from another team, and then his original or incumbent team has the right to match it. If that team does not match the deal, that player goes to the other, to his new team, without compensation. If you're a franchise tag player and you sign an offer sheet with somebody else and your team declines it, the new team sends 2 first-round picks to the old team. So transition tags far from eliminate the possibility of player movement, franchise tags almost always mean that player is returning for at least 1 year to his original team.
Absolutely. And we'll start with the transition tag because Ian certainly has a little bit to say about this particular player, don't you, Ian?
Yeah.
The one transition tag went to Dolphins D-end Olivier Vernon, which will pay him about $12.7 million. So I'll just go ahead and ask you, Ian, what are the chances that Vernon stays in Miami getting the transition tag, knowing too that they tried this with Clay last year, Charles Clay, and they lost him to Buffalo?
Yeah, I mean, just from an outsider's view, it was kind of a strange move because it just happened with Clay last year. And obviously, you look at Vernon, he plays a more valuable position where there's 19 teams with over $20 million in cap space as of right now. And I don't even think that's including rollover or vet cuts. So Miami's obviously cash strapped right now before their restructures and everything happens. So I don't know. It was kind of a baffling decision. I feel like if you really wanted to keep him, you would just franchise him for 15. Obviously, that changes the value of the contract that his agent may go for, but that was kind of a head-scratching decision. And I mean, Field, I don't know if you kind of have a take on Vernon specifically. What do you think happens with him? I mean, I know from my standpoint, someone that, you know, has covered the team a little bit, that was a little bit of a head scratcher. Either you want him or you don't. And the transition tag kind of eliminates that compensatory pick aspect of it. So to me, the move said, we're going to be really aggressive this offseason, and we at least want a chance at keeping him, but we're not going to fully commit to him, which is kind of a weird place to be.
I tell you what, it's not a deep free agent class, right? This is not, you know, and last year was a little bit of an exception because Ndamukong Suh was such a talented player, but it's not a great free agent class. I wouldn't be surprised if Olivier Vernon becomes the best player to change teams this offseason, or at least has a shot at it. He's really good. Like, he's really, really good. And he's 26 years old, 25 years old. He's entering the prime physical years of his career. Olivier Vernon is A++ character wise. And I know people, you know, this is, you know, you get paid for your abilities on the field. But if you're making an investment in a player in free agency, he has to be a no doubter on the field and off the field. Olivier Vernon is both. He plays a premium position. And if you look at the market, I mean, each team has $12 million more this year to spend than it did last year based off the rise in cap. And who doesn't need a pass rusher other than maybe the Denver Broncos this offseason? So if I am a team that has any level of need for a pass rusher and also has cap space, I'm taking a look at Olivier Vernon. Whether it's, you know, you look at the teams that have obvious needs for pass rushers at the top of the draft board. The Giants, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, the Jacksonville Jaguars, even the Dallas Cowboys. They're a little bit tighter to the cap. But those first three teams that I mentioned, and the Oakland Raiders as well, you're talking 50, you know, $50 million or $70 million in cap space for some of those teams. Olivier Vernon is the kind of player that right now should be smiling ear to ear for a chance to really see a payday. And I suppose I say worst case scenario with air quotes is that he's going to be back in Miami and make close to $12 million.
Kind of switching over to free agency field, from the team aspect, from your experience, what is the next week to 10 days kind of like as we get into free agency? What is it like behind the scenes?
Yeah, so it's funny. I think the and I remember this. My first free agency period in Kansas City was when free agency used to begin at midnight, right? And so we're all sitting there, all the young guys and scouting, and you know we are all sort of waiting for midnight to roll around, and you know midnight working until midnight is not that uncommon in the NFL, but. We were all sitting there, and it was sort of like, all right, we're all counting down. It was not quite, you know, the anticipation of waiting for the ball to drop. But it was, you know, we were sitting there like, what's going on here? And Scott Pioli popped out at one point. It was just like, all right, guys, like, what's everybody doing here? You know, we're like, well, we're sort of waiting for midnight. And it was kind of like, what do you think? At 12:01, we're just going to have, you know, it's going to be like mass hysteria. We're going to have, like, all this stuff going on. Like, we're in a good position. You know, we've identified the players that we want to pursue, you know, and when we can begin to negotiate with them, this was the pre-legal tampering period, that'll get done. You know, it wasn't like, hey, we have to, you know, we have to gear up so that 12:01 we can start to, you know, we can start to pick up the phones and all that stuff. Like, they always had a plan, and they laid that plan, and when it was time to put that plan into action, and you could actually talk to agents and all that stuff, it was go time. Now things are a little bit different because of the legal tampering period. So Monday, I believe it starts, where for 3 days, you can talk to agents. Not players directly, but you can talk to their agents. So teams are going to be negotiating, evaluating price points for players, and, you know, sort of giving, you know, their, you know, sort of figuring out where these players might fit in their roster. So I think that, you know, this week is identifying what your needs are, identifying the price point, and then hopefully sizing up the market for the various people that are on your radar. Because by the time, as we saw last year, as we've seen in previous years with legal tampering period, like over the next, well, during that 3 day stretch, like teams are going to have a pretty good indication of not just, you know, whether they're in on a player, but also who else is in on that player and what the price point is for that player.
That's fascinating because, you know, as fans, I think a lot of fans are like, oh my goodness, we missed out on player X, Y, or Z. And reality is the team may never have been even interested in them. And you know, all of a sudden you'll see almost what it seems like a reactionary deal come after that. And it's like, well, did they just kind of freak out and, you know, overcompensate for this player when the reality is that they've had this plan all along, although they may have checked with that other player. They actually were preparing for this other situation. So it's always a bananas time of year. Before we get you off your field, do you have any predictions for free agency? Any bold, crazy things that you think could happen in the next couple weeks?
I mean, you know, I don't know if I have – because the class lacks, like, a huge superstar name – like, you know, if I want to say, hey, you know, I could see Malik Jackson reuniting with Jack Del Rio in Oakland, that might not be that bold because I think there are people who still, you know, are pretty interested football fans still don't know who Malik Jackson is. So I don't think there's an obvious, like, bold prediction out there. I will say that I think we're going to see a lot of money thrown around. Teams have a lot of money to spend, and I think that they are going to spend it. And I think that players who are available to be paid, so the non-franchise guys, are really in for a productive couple weeks ahead. Looking forward, I always look forward to it. I think maybe one of the other bigger contracts could be Brock Osweiler. We can debate the merits of Brock as a quarterback, but I think he's about to get paid in a major way.
Boy, that was a lot of good info, Field.
Anytime, guys. Let's do it again at some point here. I know we got some fun nights, fun weeks ahead, but let's catch up at some point again.
Absolutely, Field. We'd love to have you on. Anything you want to shout out, or, you know, obviously people can find you at Field Yates on Twitter. Anything you want to shout out or promote or anything before you head up?
I got nothing.
All right. Sounds good, man. But, yeah, thanks so much. That was a lot of great info, and I think all the listeners and certainly Ian and I think, too, definitely learned a lot from you. So really appreciate it, and we definitely have to have you back on at some point.
Sounds good, gentlemen.
All righty. And so we'll take a quick break, and we'll be right back on GG. And we're back. Quick break. Once again, we want to really thank Field Yates for jumping on the show. Just outstanding, the info that he brought. Hopefully all you listeners out there are a little bit smarter for having listened to Field. Again, if you're not following Field on Twitter, shame on you, because he's just a pro's pro. He's just so cool, and it was a real honor to have him on. Yeah, so how was your little mini vacay, I guess, from the show, Ian? We've been gone for a few weeks.
It's been good, Just still, you know, writing 6 articles a week. So still pretty busy, but things are well, like I mentioned at the start of the show, preparing for free agency and the fun that will bring.
Oh, yeah.
And I think like Field mentioned, I think it is going to be a fun one. We're going to see big names be getting paid a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And we really have to judge it a little bit differently than past years, because the money is different. Mm-hmm. You know, the cap has risen 13%, you know, this past year. And over the past couple of years, it's, you know, risen even more. Mm-hmm. We were at $140 million just about 2 years ago. We're at $155 million now. And it was, I believe, $125 million even just, like, I think 2 or 3 years ago. So,
yeah.
You know, the money continues to rise. It's not a bad thing. It's a, you know, it makes it fun for fans, and mm-hmm. and that's the point of it. Hey, everyone has a chance to kind of upgrade their roster. I think that it's going to be really interesting to see how Oakland approaches this with, you know, $74 million. Jacksonville's got about $75 million. I don't think they're going to be as aggressive as Oakland, but if I'm Oakland, I swing hard this offseason, and I look to really improve my team. So I think it's going to be a great free agency period. Hopefully it's not over before it really begins with, you know, long-term deals struck this week. I was disappointed that Vernon was franchise tagged. I was disappointed that Josh Norman was franchise tagged, because I was going to write a big article on him. I studied him, and Josh Norman, I think, is pretty overrated. Which that's probably a hot take, but you know, I don't know what will happen, and what I do know what will happen. Like Field mentioned, there's a lot of money to be spent. There'll be some major impact players, I think, trading teams. And it's going to be fascinating to see, like he mentioned, where does Brock Osweiler go? And once the first week or two of free agency settles, we're going to be able to accurately predict the draft a little bit easier.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, all it is just for fun.
Yeah.
You know, all it takes is for one team to get Danny Trevathan or one team to get Sean Smith at cornerback. Just a couple signings here and there completely change the needs for a team. And all of a sudden it doesn't become, okay, we have to address this need. Now it becomes, we can just take the biggest impact player available or the best player available at our pick, which is, you know, that completely changes the face of the draft, especially if that happens in the top 5 to 10 picks, which I think that it should. I think that you should always take the biggest impact or best player available. I don't really believe in drafting for need. You know, obviously your grades that you give out are somewhat affected by your needs, but I don't think just purely needs-based. If you need a right tackle, you don't go into the first round saying, I need a right tackle right now. It's just that's not how good teams draft. So it'll be fascinating. It's going to set us up for a really fun draft season. I love free agency. I love the hustle and bustle and the breaking news reports by guys like Field Yates. He's broken quite a few stories here in the last year or two, and I think it's going to be a great time.
Yeah, I always enjoy watching, like, NFL insiders on ESPN the day of the start of free agency and just watching Adam Schefter just play on his phone on air.
Yeah.
Like, it's so cool to watch. And he has the two – it's not like it's just one – he's got two phones working. He's got, like, his iPhone or whatever in one hand. He has a BlackBerry in the other. Thumbs going nonstop. It's crazy. But, yeah, it's really fun to watch. And – I agree. Like, the Raiders and the Jaguars, I think, are going to be two interesting teams to watch because of the whole, you know, this cash floor that's been talked about and how those two are below the floor right now. So they're going to have to do a little bit of spending. And especially the Raiders, like you said, so much cap room. And this is definitely a team on the rise. You know, I think with the right moves, you know, if you bring in enough talent, the Raiders are a dark horse contender, I think, to make the playoffs next season. You know, at this point last year, I was pegging the Vikings, you know, to make the playoffs. So I pat myself a bit on the back for that. This year, that team for me is going to be the Raiders. You know, we've seen the strides that they're starting to make. You know, we saw the strides that Derek Carr made. We saw, you know, Amari Cooper prove why he was the top wide receiver in the draft and, you know, had a very good rookie season. Khalil Mack, in just a second year, has become an absolute beast on that defense and has become the face of that franchise. So, you know, they're going to be a really interesting team, I think, to watch in free agency. But, yeah, you know, so the next couple weeks, at least for me, too, are going to be fun because free agency next week. And then the Sunday after is Selection Sunday, which is kind of like a second Christmas to me. I just love Selection Sunday. You know, I mean, obviously this is going off topic a bit, but, you know, I'm a huge NCAA tournament fan. I love seeing, you know, the bracket be revealed, where teams slide in, and then, you know, comparing my final projections to the actual tournament. And I know you're big on the NBA draft. That's why I kind of bust you a little bit. You know, sorry you're not going to get to see Ben Simmons. But you at least are going to see, and I'm sorry to Duke fans that are listening. The kid's name is Brandon Allen?
Grayson Allen.
Yeah. That was close. Sorry, Duke fans.
Brandon Allen is the Arkansas quarterback who I like.
Well, so at least that name is in sports a little bit, so that works. But yeah, Grayson Allen, you're obviously going to see him in the tournament. But Ben Simmons, you know, the only way he'll be in the tournament is if LSU wins the SEC tournament, which is a shame, too, because obviously, you know, you love seeing big names and big prospects play in the tournament, but too many slip-ups for the Tigers. But, I mean, anything can happen championship week, so we'll see.
Yeah, it should be a good time. I really, that's when I like to watch. I'm only really like a conference tournament, March Madness type of fan.
Mm-hmm.
But I am excited for it, especially since I'm closer to family now. My family likes to get together and watch, so
yep.
should be a fun tournament. And unfortunately, Ben Simmons, I won't be able to watch him. But isn't there like a forward from Kentucky or someone that's supposed to be good too.
I'm trying to think of the Kentucky guy. Maybe Tyler Ulis.
Maybe that's him. I'm not too sure. I was listening to the Bill Simmons podcast.
Yeah.
They were talking about some shooting forward. I think they mentioned him as a small forward, but they said the difference between he and Simmons is that he was more of a shooter. So that'll be I don't know. I know nothing about it, so I go in with an open mind and just kind of have fun watching it.
Absolutely. As I'm just scrolling through the Kentucky roster now. Oh, maybe Labissier.
Could be.
But anyway, yeah, conference tournaments have already gotten underway, so always an exciting time. Already some upsets in the conference tournaments. By the way, go Stony Brook. They've been close so many times to getting into the tournament, falling short. But hopefully this is the year. And then how about those Warriors, man? Wow, just what a run. Like, I've talked to a couple people about this. It's just a joy. Like, it's just amazing to just sit and watch Steph Curry and how good he's been shooting the ball. And there's definitely now a legit shot that this team could break the Bulls record of 72 wins. At this point, they have to go, what, I think 19-4 the rest of the way to break the record.
Yeah, it is fun to watch. It's hard as a Cavs fan.
yeah.
Because, like, relatively speaking, Cleveland's 41-17. That's usually a great year. But because of how good Golden State is, people are taking things with the Cavs and, like, making drama out of it. And, I mean, the Cavs aren't perfect, and they don't play perfectly. I wish that they played a little bit more, you know, pace and space, but instead of, like, ISO basketball all the time. But, you know, it is what it is. Yeah. It's really tough as a Cavs fan because, I mean, I'm not, like, a huge, like, LeBron fan since he left. And he's been a different guy since he came back. And he's just, like, kind of like a jerk. And as far as, like, his quote-unquote leadership is really poor. So it's, you know, it's really frustrating to watch. And it's fun to watch because the team's winning. February's been rough for them. But overall, it's hard to feel like you have a chance to win it all with the Warriors being so good, which is frustrating because, you know, quite honestly, if the Cavs don't win with LeBron this year or next year, I don't know when on earth a Cleveland sports team is going to win a championship. It might literally be never. I mean, we've had LeBron for like 10 years of his career almost, and we haven't won a title, and that's just, it's sad. It's upsetting. Yeah. So, I mean, I love the Cavs. Cavs are my favorite team in all sports. So, you know.
God knows the Browns are nowhere near a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Indians are still a bit of ways away from the World Series. So, yeah, it's tough. But at least they're closer to a title than the city of Philadelphia is right now. And then, of course, you know, they seem to do it every year, but the Spurs are just quietly just strutting along, having another strong season. You know, hey, if the Warriors weren't so good, I mean, the Spurs are having a heck of a season. I think they already have 50 wins, too. You know, but hey, that I think that's how the Spurs like it. You know, they're always such a good team, but it always just seems like no one ever talks about them. They're always that quiet number one seed that just lies in wait and then just pounces at the right time.
Yeah, definitely. And that's why, personally, I love basketball. I could easily write about basketball if that was the direction I wanted to go. Honestly, it might be more enjoyable. I do love football, but for whatever reason, I love basketball as well. So it's a good time of the year for it.
Absolutely. All right, well, let's get back to football. You know, I'm sure the listeners have heard enough basketball, and they're probably thinking, stick to football, or get back to football. It's like, all right, so. We'll just run through quick, because we talked about the tags earlier. For those that missed, the other franchise tags went to Muhammad Wilkerson of the Jets, Justin Tucker of the Ravens. I know what you're all thinking. A kicker? Yes, a kicker.
Extended Joe Flacco as well.
Yeah, they just extended Joe Flacco. And they almost had to because his cap number was ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's still ridiculous now, too. It's, you know, even with the extension, I think his cap number for this year is like 22.
Yeah.
But
it's weird.
He's elite.
It's talking about doubling down on your mistakes. I don't know. I mean, it's a tough position. I don't know really what you do with him.
Yeah.
Making so much money, but I feel like re-signing him or extending him really isn't the right move because now you're really stuck with him for a long time.
Sure.
I mean, I don't think he's good. I think he's pretty average.
All that money guaranteed that he's getting now, too. Whew.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Maybe
$40 million signing bonus.
Maybe Ozzy is just losing it as he gets older.
Wacko Flacco.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, so Justin Tucker got tagged for the Ravens. The Bills tagged Cordy Glenn. Chicago tags Alshon Jeffrey. Not much of a surprise. Carolina, Josh Norman, Von Miller of the Broncos, Kirk Cousins, who has already signed his franchise tender, surprisingly enough. You always hear these players, you know, they don't want to get tagged. You know, they'll hold out of camp till they get a new contract or whatnot, and they'll refuse to sign the tender. Kirk Cousins wasted no time signing his tender, but, you know, it's kind of like how what Kian Fahey, I think I said his name right, he pretty much said it best. Kirk Cousins couldn't believe he's pretty much sprinting towards the $20 million, which,
oh yeah,
you know, that's what he's going to get now, almost $20 million for one season, unless, you know, he signs a long-term contract. So, boy, good for Kirk Cousins. Spend all that time as RG3's backup. Now he's going to roll in the dough.
Yep, definitely. We'll see how that works out long-term. I think that was the right move.
Yeah.
For the Redskins. I wrote obviously a big article about it, and he's a guy. If I'm actually looking at this, and I'm the Redskins, I'm hoping that a guy like Jared Goff falls to me, and I'm drafting Jared Goff if he's there at their pick. I mean, I don't think it's likely that he's going to be there because there's a bunch of teams that need a quarterback before them. But for whatever reason, if he drops or if Paxton Lynch drops, I'm taking him and I'm developing him because I'm really not a Kirk Cousins fan. I think he's pretty, I think he's in like probably like the 20s if you're ranking quarterbacks in the NFL right now. And obviously, I mean, another guy that was extended at quarterback, your guy,
my boy,
Sam Bradford. Yeah. Basically a 1 year, 1-1, mm-hmm. 1 year with basically an option.
Yeah.
They can easily escape.
Yeah, I think it was Ian Rappaport who pretty much I was listening to on NFL Network. I think it was Albert Breer. It was one of the two. It might have been Breer. Basically, the contract, you know, face value says 2 years, $36 million. It could end up being a 1 year, $22 million deal because he gets essentially $18 million guaranteed this year. He got, I think, an $11 million signing bonus. And he'll have a $7 million guaranteed base salary for 2016. And then $4 million of his salary for 2017 is guaranteed. But he has a $4 million roster bonus that's due, I think they said March 17th of next season.
Yeah.
So
that's a key date. Yeah.
So like you said, it's basically like a 1-1. You know, he's obviously locked in now for 2016. Play it out, and then come next March, that's when they'll have to make another decision. You know, it'll be 2 years in a row now that they have to decide, okay, is Sam Bradford our guy? And of course, there's always the possibility that Philadelphia drafts a quarterback. You know, there's some mocks that have them. I've seen a couple mocks that have the Eagles taking Paxton Lynch. So,
and the interesting part for me was they were linked to Chase Daniel as a possibility. But I like the move of re-signing Bradford. Honestly, I like Bradford more than I like Kirk Cousins. And you saw it in the second half of the year with Bradford. he looked more comfortable. He looked like he was healthier. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's a major positive moving forward. Now, that being said, am I taking a quarterback if one falls to me? Yes.
You have to.
Yes, absolutely. I don't think that you can afford to not take one just because you have a one-year deal with a quarterback. But if none falls to you at the end of the first round, maybe you get to the third round and you get Dak Prescott from Mississippi State, and he's on the board. I'm taking him in the third round. He's a guy, I actually compared him to Chase Daniel. And now some people really don't like Chase Daniel, and he's never really gotten a chance. But I think as far as strengths-wise, I think that Prescott, is he ready to start today? No. No, he's a 1 or 2 year project. But he showed massive development over the last couple of years. He's a very good short passer. And if you look at Doug Peterson's system, that's what he's going to be doing. And you can definitely do that with a guy like Paxton Lynch, even Carson Wentz. Carson Wentz has a big arm, but he is not a deep ball thrower. He's a terrible deep ball thrower. Now, he won't make it to the Eagles pick. I think Lynch might make it to the Eagles pick. Goff might have a chance to reach there. I don't think he will, but he has a chance. So it'll be really interesting to see where these quarterbacks go. I mean, I think that the media somewhat, you know, inflates their value.
Mm-hmm.
But I would really like that fit of Dak Prescott. You invest a third-round pick into him if you can. If you miss on him, you know, I really like Brandon Allen. You could probably get him fifth round. I think he's a guy that could be a solid starter in the NFL. You know, a lower end starter, but still someone who's serviceable, especially for your investment into him. I think he could easily be Kirk Cousins. And if you're getting that type of production out of a, you know, fifth rounder, you're pretty happy with that.
Mm-hmm.
Even as a quality backup. And you need that. You need that with Bradford, whether he works out or not. So they've got options. I like that deal a lot. I like that they're not spending much on him either. Ryan Fitzpatrick's going to be in the market for a new deal as well. We haven't heard much about him. Brock Osweiler, as Field mentioned, he's going to get paid this offseason. It's pretty impressive to me that they were able to re-sign him before free agency when all that money's available. And as I wrote today, this column will publish tomorrow morning, so by the time you're listening to this, at home, it will be already published. There's really no incentive for these players to take a deal right now with free agency right around the corner. So it says a lot about his willingness to stay, his desire to stay, and a system that works for him. And the team also coming in with a pretty fair, but you know, without overpaying him, especially on a multi-year deal. So I think that's one of the deals that really worked out well for both parties.
And then real quick, the other two tags went to Eric Berry in Kansas City and Trumaine Johnson in Los Angeles. And this is how you know I'm still struggling with saying Los Angeles. I wrote the list in my notebook, and I was about to write St. Louis.
Yeah, no, I almost caught myself typing out St. Louis today as well. I like both these moves. Eric Berry's a no-brainer.
Yeah.
You got to bring him back. Trumaine Johnson, just real quick, Trumaine Johnson, I think that was the right pick as well over Janoris Jenkins. He's the more talented player. Jenkins is also talented, but I think Johnson's closer to a true number one corner than Jenkins is.
Yeah, And I'm just so happy just to see Eric Berry playing as well as he is now, coming back from, you know, what he went through. So just an outstanding story for Eric Berry.
Oh, yeah. No doubt about it. No doubt about it. I mean, he definitely the comeback player of the year, in my opinion.
I said, you know, when he took the field week one, I was like, I don't care how many snaps he plays, what his stats look like, whatever. Even if he played one play all season, he's my comeback player of the year. And no one can tell me otherwise.
Yep, absolutely.
You know, you could have your Carson Palmers and, you know, whoever else you wanted to nominate. Coming back from, you know, from what he had, trumps everything.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Whether he was good or not, just playing.
Just the fact that he was on the field.
Yeah.
Tells you all you need to know.
Yeah, let alone the fact that he actually did come back at, like, an elite level.
High level, yes.
Yeah.
That just makes it all the more better. And then certainly a lot of other news that happened, even today, the day we're recording this, Wednesday, March 2nd, a couple players got released. You know, the biggest name, you know, even though he's been on the decline a bit, but certainly, you know, fans are obviously going to ask, should their team sign him because, you know, hashtag name value. Roddy White, you know, certainly one of the faces of the Falcons for 10-plus years, but his cap number just proved to be too high for the Falcons to keep him. So he's gone. The Patriots cut Brandon LaFell and Scott Chandler. Alex Mack opted out of his contract with the Browns. You had Marcus Colston get cut by the Saints. Again, another player where, you know, been in decline for a couple seasons, but fans are going to notice him in free agency just because his name is Marcus Colston.
Yeah, no real surprises there. You know, it will be weird some of these other guys playing in different uniforms next year.
Especially a guy like Roddy White. Like, just, you know, wherever he goes, you know, that, like I said, because he spent, what, like 10, 11 years with the Falcons. It's always so interesting. You know, you're so used to certain players in a certain jersey. But I guess if we saw it with Peyton Manning, we could see it with pretty much anyone. Well, except Tom Brady. Which, but there's another quarterback that got extended, too.
Yep. Yep.
And then former Dolph, we actually had signing, I think it was yesterday, former Dolphin Bryce McCain signing with Tennessee. You know, so Tennessee slowly starting the rebuilding process, I guess.
Yeah, it was kind of a weird pickup for them, but Bryce McCain's a good player. He's just a slot cornerback. You know, I'm just a little, I don't know, it's a good opportunity for him to play, but kind of weird for them to pick him up, I guess. But maybe they're trying to, like you said, they're trying to pick up that rebuild process right away. So
yeah. And I want to go back to, I wanted to get your thoughts here. We talked about Jalen Ramsey earlier. I just wanted to go back, touch on him a little bit. We got Fields' thoughts on him. But I know you're a big fan, you know, and I checked out your article about your takeaways from the combine. And if you haven't checked out Ian's work, you should. He, you know, had some good takes on, you know, what he took away from the combine. And one of them talked about Jalen Ramsey, who, like we mentioned, just had an outstanding workout. You know, they're saying, like, some of the numbers he put up are just outstanding. And we, you know, Field mentioned how the combine can be used as confirmation. So I'm sure this was, you know, confirmation for you about how good Jalen Ramsey could be at the NFL level.
Yeah, I think the sky's the limit for him. And really excited to see where he lands. I think he'll probably go that top four range. I don't think he'll get past Dallas there at four. Whether you play him at corner or safety, I really prefer him at safety. But, hey, you know, I wouldn't complain that much.
And I think it was a guy from your alma mater, Houston, William Jackson. I think it was him that NFL Network compared, at least numbers-wise. Or maybe it was Jalen. It was one of the two. It was either William Jackson or Jalen Ramsey. They're saying, like, his workout numbers were so good, and they compared it to Byron Jones last season from UConn. Just how outstanding the workout numbers were. It might have been Ramsey, but I know William Jackson had a little bit of talk throughout the combine.
Yeah, I mean, going through the combine numbers, I mean, that like those type of numbers just kind of pop out, and then you're comparing them to historical data, and you're saying, okay, like, where's this guy rank? To like the past, you know, I've got about 10 years worth of data from someone that sent that to me, and so that's what I've compared it to, and it's like, wow. Like, this is a guy that, like, you're putting him up there in, like, the top, you know, 10% or whatever of positional players over that time span. It's like, you know, that's a special athlete. And, you know, it's not necessarily just being a great athlete. It's being a great football player and being a great athlete. Those are the type of players that you invest very high picks into. And those generally tend to be the best players. It's hard to find good football players that aren't good athletes. And when you do, those are really exceptions. But it is easier to find, obviously, great athletes who are bad football players. So you've got to have a mix there. Even if it's a good athlete, good player, if you can find that special athlete or that special football player, and then you can combine it to really find something. Like Field had mentioned, you know, Aaron Donald was one of those guys, too, who is a fantastic athlete and a fantastic football player. You know, does this class have any of those guys? I think they've got a couple with Tunsil and Ramsey. And I don't know if Bosa is, like, special. I love Bosa. I think he's a great prospect. But I don't know if he's, like, you know, that elite player.
Yeah, I think that was some good talk. I think it's a good note to end on. Unless you have some bold free agency predictions of your own to share, because, you know, by the time we reconvene next week, free agency will officially start. So, you have any hot takes you think are going to happen?
That's literally the article I've got coming out tomorrow.
Oh, then maybe we'll hold off then. Yeah, that'll be the teaser for the article.
Yeah. So just check out my article that's already out there by the time you're listening to this.
Alrighty, we'll hold off on that then. So on that note, I think that was definitely one of our better shows, I think, for sure. It was really exciting. You know, as always, Ian, thanks for jumping on board with me. It's always a pleasure to chat football with you, my friend.
Absolutely. Thanks so much. And obviously, people, give Bill a lot of credit. He did the legwork. He got Field on the podcast. Excellent job, my friend.
No problem, bud.
I know we've got some more other guests lined up for the future, or at least that we're working on, and I think that people will be pretty excited for them as well.
Absolutely, yeah. We've future plans. You know, we're not going to spoil the guests, but we're setting up a live mock here on Grid Grads. Well, I mean, you know, we'll be recording it. Obviously, you can listen at your leisure, but we're going to plan a 4-man mock draft here on GG. We'll have two guests. It'll be the first time, I think, that we'll have two guests on the show. And I'm really excited because these two guys are just outstanding draft minds. Ian knows who they are now, and I'm sure Ian is just as excited as I am for who we have planned for our mock draft.
No doubt about it.
So by the time we come back next week, the new league year and free agency will officially be underway as we are knee-deep in the draft season. It's almost here. Less than 2 months now till the draft. We'll be kicking it in high gear soon and getting ready, and we'll certainly have a lot to talk about next week. So until then, thanks so much, guys, for listening as always. Let us know what you think. Certainly if there's any guests you'd like to see come on the show or anything you'd like us to talk about, you know, hit us up. You know, Bill, I'm at Bill_Rossetti, and Ian, of course, is at NFL Film Study. And again, follow Field at Field Yates. He does an excellent job breaking news and giving a unique insight that you really can't find in too many places. So until next time, for Ian and myself, take care, guys. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time right here on GG. Take care, my friends.